What is going on, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome into Lineup Logic, the daily fantasy podcast bringing you lineup construction ideas and insights for the week to come in DFS. I am your host, Sean Kane. Monday, week two in the books, baby. September 18th, the fall is upon us. The football smell is in the air on Saturday and Sunday mornings. The hoodies are being unfurled and the leaves are beginning to fall. You hear the leaf blower in my yard, I don't know, every other day because so many goddamn trees. Anyway, all right, enough about the leaf blower. Great week for the Lineup Logic crew. Absolutely killing it. Got to say, shout out to Ryan and Scott, DFS Kingsguard and DFS Spectre. Took down 15K on DK in a tournament, and just edged out Condia for top spot on the night. Condia had like lineup 2 through 10 there, and lineups 2 through 10, so they edged him out. Absolutely thrilling stuff for those guys. Massively happy for them. It just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful day. And you know what? Ryan raked on FD too. So shout out to Spectre. Guys, those are two of our analysts, right? Ryan and KG, right on our cheat sheet. Those are our cheat sheet guys. So if you're interested in the cheat sheet, patreon.com/lineuplogic, that's where you can find their takes and our weekly expert survey. As for the lineup show, kind of a hot mess this week. I'm so sorry because we did a great show. It was awesome. Mike Alexander, Roto One, my man over there. Follow him at Roto One. It was with me and Josh. It was a great, great show. Hilarity ensues. And then I was trying to update the Patreon page and like an idiot deleted the link. And I'm so sorry because all day Saturday I tried to hustle to make sure anybody who was like, Sean, I don't know what's up with the link, would get it. And eventually I got the video in the Slack channel. First of all, patrons, guys, if there's ever an issue, please do not hesitate to DM me on Twitter or at me in the Slack or any of the guys, Spectre or Josh, any of us. We will figure out what's going on. Like the last thing I want is one of you guys to go without the lineup show or go without, you know, the resources you need. So please, always, never an imposition to say, hey, I need a little help figuring this out. Second thing, the lineup show, I will make sure that those links get sent out a little bit earlier so people can get in there and make sure that they get the live stream. It's been a lot of fun. Really, it has. It's been great. Fern went through a little bit of a lineup there, the GPP lineup. I went through a cash breakdown. We talked matchups. Of course, Mike always has really good matchup takes. So plenty of fun had by the Lineup Logic crew this weekend. Of course, if you're interested, it's $10 for the month. Lineup Logic over on Patreon, patreon.com/lineuplogic. If you haven't already, do me a favor, subscribe to the podcast, rate, review. Honestly the best thing that you can do. If you don't, you know, if you're not a cheat sheet supporter or whatever, that's fine. Don't worry about it. But subscribe to the show, rate, review. That would be awesome. Hey, we got stuff to talk about, man. Lots of happenings happening in week two of the NFL. So this podcast, I am going to go through the takeaways from each game that we learned. Again, what are we looking for? We are looking to learn about players that maybe are undervalued right now. We're looking for opportunity, overlooked opportunity in these things. And then we're going to go through some of the early trends that we've seen from offense, some play calling trends, some unexpected offenses, and see where do our preseason ideas align with what we see happening currently so that we can start to try and devise some edges and ways that you guys can understand what makes a viable fantasy target via the big pictures of offenses. So with all that said, let's go ahead and jump into the classroom edition of the podcast for week three. We don't need no education. All right. Starting off with the Thursday game, Houston at Cincinnati. Wow, that was a waste of airtime. Brutal matchup there. These teams are just they're not that good. I've seen some some shade thrown at Deshaun Watson, his arm strength issues. Andy Dalton doesn't look good. That offensive line looks bad. The rushing attack is inefficient in Cincinnati. But, you know, listen, I'm kind of in buy low mode on Cincinnati because I know that they're capable of scoring touchdowns. Like, A.J. Green is capable of getting into the end zone, and he's still getting good target share. You know, the clear takeaways here, Houston wants to run the ball, 56% rush rate. Lamar Miller, though, kind of less effective than Deontay Foreman. Foreman, it really feels like a valuable add in season long. If Miller ever gets hurt, like, they're going to feed Deontay Foreman. You know, he was able to gain 40 yards and was kind of more efficient than Lamar Miller. You know, but the truth of the matter is Houston's going to rely on their defense. Rookie quarterback, they're going to rely on their defense all the time. You know, the nice thing was that the only fantasy piece that you really continue to worry about is Hopkins. He continues to see volume, and like, he's going to be able to take some of those to the house. Like, Cincinnati's actually been extremely effective against wide receivers this year thus far. So they limited Hopkins a little bit there. But I think DeAndre Hopkins continues to be kind of a buy low target, as well as AJ Green. I mean, AJ Green is going to have value. They're going to be behind a lot. Dalton is going to have to throw the ball. And we know that Dalton to Green, when they're both healthy, is fantasy viable. I don't think it's going to be the match made in heaven that we all, you know, predicted or had in years past, but I still think that there's going to be opportunities when we can play AJ Green in plus matchups. So, you know, the issue is Andy Dalton, I mean, he had the same passer rating as Deshaun Watson. This is a multi-million dollar veteran that you have built your franchise around, and you had the same passer rating on Thursday Night Football as Deshaun Watson at home. Yeah, you know, not good. Not good, Bob. So, you know, maybe some buy low opportunities in this game. Moving on to the Sunday, Buffalo with Carolina. Listen, I wrote an article in Lineup Logic DFS, took my takes against Vegas, kind of planted my flag on a few games. This was one that I said, this game is going to suck. This game is going to have zero fantasy value. It's going to hit the under massively. And it did. It was brutal. It was absolutely borderline unwatchable. Two teams that, you know, just kind of ineffective. You know, the best players were all defensive. The reality is the volume was there for LeSean McCoy, 19 total touches, you know, and unfortunately you continue to see the splits between Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey. I think you have to try to buy low on McCaffrey with Olsen out and Cam's like pretty inefficient. McCaffrey's going to probably be playing a lot of those dump roles that Greg Olsen, you know, Greg Olsen isn't like just a dump off tight end, but there are situations where those routes are going to need to be filled, and those routes can be filled, I think, by Christian McCaffrey, who, if he gets that passing down volume, you know, you got to see those targets go somewhere. It was interesting though, you know, to see, listen, there was one play that I think may go unnoticed about McCaffrey. And here it is. They are on the 5-yard line. It is third and goal. And McCaffrey peels out into the flat and has a step on the linebacker in coverage. Cam just completely missed him. It was a touchdown. And I think this box score looks completely different. Fantasy value about Craig Christian McCaffrey looks completely different. If you know somebody who's a McCaffrey owner, it looks like they can sell. I'm going to buy him, and I'm going to buy low early and often on McCaffrey now, because I mean, Cam just completely sailed the ball on him. It's a touchdown, like guaranteed touchdown, and fantasy world is a buzz with McCaffrey touchdown, first touchdown, if all of a sudden he has that red zone target that, you know, is inside the five and he converted it, and it was a terrible throw. Kelvin Benjamin and Devin Funches, actually viable, like good target volume, good yards per catch, things like that. So I think there are going to be situations when Cam throws for, you know, more than like a 60% completion rate, and these pass catchers are actually going to be viable now with Greg Olsen out of the picture. I think we have to try to buy low on some of these Carolina assets, even though this team does not look good and the Carolina defense looks filthy. They are back. Now, will they stay healthy? That's the big question. So, Cleveland, Baltimore. Oh, geez. I don't know why Hugh Jackson said he wanted to run the ball more in the offseason, because he's not. He refuses to run the ball. I mean, in negative game script, but like, they're just not really running the ball that much. They had a 38% success rate, which wasn't massive, but 4.5 yards per carry. I thought that was pretty decent and not a very serious, you know, passing success rate. So I don't really understand what the vision is for this offense. They just lost Corey Coleman, which is a big deal. You know, listen, Duke Johnson right now may be more valuable than Isaiah Crowell in certain situations because of the negative game script. He's going to catch the football, and Isaiah Crowell is just kind of getting phased out. You want to see him hammer the ball. You know he's a decently effective back, and this offensive line is supposed to be good. But I think defenses are just loading the box when they see Crowell because they're not really scared of Kaiser or Kevin Hogan. The one thing I will say is Higgins is going to be a really, really nice buy low target this week coming up. He has massive value. 11 targets, 99 yards, with one red zone and end zone target there. You know, Baltimore, listen, they've flipped from being the most pass heavy offense in the league to the most run heavy offense in the league. And that was something that, you know, I kind of predicted with that's Jacksonville also running the hell out of the ball with Greg Roman there and positive game script. That defense is putting them in good situations. They are milking the clock. They know that they don't have an elite wide receiving core, but Jeremy Maclin, once again, touchdown, back-to-back weeks with a touchdown, sneaky Jeremy Maclin. We know Flacco can throw the ball. I mean, Jeremy Maclin, it could be this year's Steve Smith. Now, I hesitate to say that because I fucking love Steve Smith, but it seems like that role is there. You know, the consistency of targets and when they want to throw the ball in the in the red zone, Maclin could be that guy for them. So sneaky value there. Buck Allen, though, I mean, he's going to be the every down back. And now you got Terrence West with a soft tissue injury. Oh my gosh, Buck Allen. Buck Allen, man. I mean, he's a beast, and he can carry the workload. You know, we saw 19 total touches, 14 carries, and 5 receptions where he had the touchdown on the reception. Allen is the one, man. Allen is going to be, I think he's going to be a top. I was going to say he's top 24 back this year, no doubt about that. But I think I'm going to go out on a limb and say top 16. I'm going to say top 16. Yeah, I mean right there in the mix. I don't know if I can qualify him as RB1 just yet, because if West is at all healthy, he's going to continue to vulture touchdowns. But I think he's a top 16 back. I think he can handle the every down work. He's in an offense that wants to run the ball. He has, I think, untapped potential. Like, this guy's good. Like, if you can go buy him from somebody who's, you know, feeling themselves, go buy him. There's value on this Baltimore team that's going to be sneaky on a week-to-week basis. And I think that it's not going to be an extraordinary. It's almost like a floor value. So you're buying when these prices are reasonable earlier in the season and people are overlooking these spots where you could maybe get a cheap touchdown out of a guy. That is Arizona, Indiana. I have some of my notes on paper here and some of them on the computer, so I'm trying to make sure I don't miss anything. Arizona, Indiana. This Arizona team is dying a slow Carson Palmer death. Like, we are witnessing Carson Palmer ride into the sunset this year. I can't say it any other way. Like, he's had some balls that look great, but he just really, I mean, 8 deep balls, 3 touches in the end zone. They have run some of the most plays inside the red zone, and they have 2 losses to show for it, and they weren't able to score a touchdown on, like, 3 trips to the red zone against the Colts. Like, what is going on? What is wrong with this team? Is it all DJ? No, they're just, I don't think Palmer has any high quality receivers. I think him and Larry have lost a step. You add those two things together, what do? You pray for a JJ Nelson 100-yard touchdown, and he got one. He got one. So congratulations to everybody who played JJ Nelson. I was like, come on, man. It's a good play. It's not a great play. But that was me planting a flag, and I was wrong. That's fine. I mean, Carson only had an 82 passer rating, one of the lower marks on the year. That was actually even lower than Jacoby Brissett. I mean, are you kidding me? Who had a higher completion rate? Listen, the only viable fantasy assets right now in the Colts, by the way, are Jack Doyle and maybe Frank Gore in a plus matchup. But Frank Gore, only 14 carries. Marlon Mack, not really showing that he is a thing. But Jack Doyle, man, massively efficient. 8 for 8 with 91 yards. He continues to soak up that volume. And I think what the biggest takeaway for me this year, or excuse me, right now about this game is that not only is the Cardinals offense struggling, the Cardinals defense is struggling. To give it up on back-to-back weeks against two bad teams and not give it up in a massive way, or not bad, Detroit's not bad, but to give it up to Indiana in a way that they were in the game the entire time, just says a lot that maybe this defense is not the same without Calais Campbell. Maybe Tyrann Mathieu is not completely healthy. It's hard to get a read on this unit in my mind. Maybe they'll be better at home. Maybe once they get home, they'll be in a better situation. Kansas City, Philadelphia. Oh my gosh, Kareem Hunt. Just unbelievable. Watching him is just such a treat, dude. Such burst. Listen. Philadelphia is there in the middle of this drive, that first touchdown. They're in the middle of this drive. Kansas City's just picking away a couple things here and there. And Philadelphia kind of, you know, gets on their heels a little bit and they run this like, and it's not a counter necessarily, but they pulled a wide receiver across the formation to open a lane for Hunt. And he found just a touch of daylight against a Philadelphia unit that was just kind of hands on hips, wasn't ready for him. And he just gashed. The burst is so there. He's so strong in traffic. And then once he gets out into that open field, he's just fast. Took it to the house. The second TD, though, was the one that I would really just kind of like ogled at. Like, he's on the goal line, nothing happening, nothing there. And he just straight powers his way in there, back to the end zone, just goes straight in. I mean, 4.7 yards after contact, forces 6 missed tackles. That's 14 total missed tackles on the year in 2 games against, you know, units that like are supposed to be halfway decent. Like, the Pats are, you know, kind of struggling this year. That's for sure. Philadelphia against the run is not so, I mean, they have some really good linebackers, right? I mean, they're not supposed to be this bad. So I think Kareem Hunt is just unbelievable talent. Really fun to watch this kid. Eagles were throwing the ball a ton, 80% of the time. You saw very, very small volume. LeGarrette Blount, 1 touch, 9 touches for Sproles, Smallwood, 4. So only 15 running attempts there. Smallwood is probably the back, besides Sproles, obviously. Smallwood's probably the back to own. But, you know, everything's going through the passing game here. Alshon Jeffrey with 13 targets and a 30% target share, 2 end zone targets, got in the end zone. We saw that. It wasn't a pretty touchdown, but it was a touchdown. And I think that, you know, Wentz is going to be able to, you know, like, he's got to, him and Ertz are 2 massive targets that he is going to feel comfortable throwing the ball, double-digit targets to them on a weekly basis. You know, had 9 deep balls. I thought that was an impressive number for Carson Wentz. Very interesting. Ertz with an 18% target share again, you know, continues to be that volume guy. As for the Chiefs, you know, aside from Kareem Hunt, I want to touch on Tyreek Hill. He saw the volume that we wanted, you know. An end zone ball, deep target. I think, you know, you got to keep the faith and continue to buy low on Tyreek Hill. I think the reality is what you usually see from Philadelphia is phenomenal coverage on the tight end because the safety commits to coverage against the tight end in support of the linebacker across the middle of the field. That is why we were reading Tyreek Hill as a possible deep threat against this defense in man-to-man coverage. They didn't let Tyreek Hill have man-to-man on the outside. And that makes sense. One play can beat you with Tyreek Hill. So you throw, you know, you bracket him top and bottom, like, you know, like you should, and you take away that possible one thing, and what happens? Travis Kelce goes off for 100 yards and a touchdown, and that touchdown by Kelce just proves that that man is just super athletic, just phenomenally athletic. It was a great play. Conley is very interesting to me, though. I want to keep our eye on Conley. I don't think Alex Smith can support any, you know, I'm not going out there season long, but there are going to be situations where Conley is interesting. 10.2 yards, average depth of target, and he went 5 for 5 this week. I think there's an interesting argument to be made for some of the peripheral pass catchers in certain situations in Kansas City beyond Hill and Kelce. Although it's risky. New England at New Orleans, of course, Tom Brady doing Tom Brady things. Saw this on PFF, unbelievable. 158 passer rating on the deep ball. Give me a break. James White and Gronk, the two biggest beneficiaries. Of course, Chris Hogan had himself a game as well. Mike Gillisley saw the volume that they want. And listen, with a positive game script where the New England is going to be able to do what they want and get to the red zone, Mike Gillisley is going to be fantasy viable for a touchdown every single week. It's just true. I don't care how many, you know, Rex Burkhead truthers we have out there. And I love me some Rex Burkhead. The fact that he was there for 3 for 41, 3 receptions for 41 yards and a touchdown just proves that man is a Swiss Army knife that I, you know, kind of hope he gets back. I'm kind of glad he's injured because, you know, you don't force yourself to hold them in your roster. Burkhead is something. And I think the thing we have to remember, though, is that this is how Belichick does it. As soon as he's in the red zone, he's going to hammer the run. And nothing is different this year. Cooks was a total bust. Totally a bust, and it was interesting. I read this in one of the game recaps on Pro Football Focus. Marshawn Lattimore is actually proving to be a really, really a very good corner for the Saints. Currently ranked as their best corner. He's been very effective. Only 8 targets over the course of the year, 6 receptions in 2 games. And he's fast. And according to, you know, what this write-up said, Cooks has historically struggled with speedy corners, so something to keep an eye on. Philip Dorsett, fantasy viable instantly because he can run really, really far down the field, and Tom Brady throws the ball perfectly. I don't know what else you want. There's not a lot of other analysis I need. And 2 deep targets with an average depth of target of 21 yards. I mean, that's boom or bust, but like that's insane. There's going to be weeks when you want to play Philip Dorsett. We almost had a touchdown. Hogan, similarly, 13-yard ADOT. Again, they're going to use those guys to stretch the field, open things up for the Gronkinator and James White, who both had massive target share and production. James White is super valuable to that offense. Like, they are going to continue to feed him. New Orleans really suffered. Wide receiver effectiveness way down. Drew Brees, passer rating, completion rate was not completely there. Michael Thomas is getting force-fed, though. And I think quietly we have to continue to have faith in the fact that this guy is a great wide receiver. 10 targets, a total of 18 on the year. He's got a 30% target share in this offense. You got to love it. And then it's kind of a mess in the middle, right? Coleman, Ginn, Kamara, Ingram. The backfield is infuriating. And, you know, Brandon Coleman continues to score touchdowns. Ted Ginn dropped a touchdown. There's a whole lot to think about with the Saints. But here's the biggest thing you have to be aware of. They have allowed 67 total real life points and over 1,000 yards in only 2 games. This defense is not getting it done. The most points to the QB and wide receiver on the year by a wide margin. And even if they are an improved unit in certain individual pieces, they're just not a great unit on the whole. So the Saints will continue to be someone that we attack. Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Martavis can blow the top off of any defense. It doesn't matter who is in coverage. This is one of the best secondaries in the league. Harrison Smith is one of the best free safeties in the league. Doesn't matter. Martavis is just, he's too commanding. He's too fast. 3 receptions, 91 yards, and a touchdown. There was a 60-yard pass interference call on him as well in the second quarter that set up that Juju Schuster-Smith touchdown. He ran straight down the middle. He had two guys draped on him, and they just tackled him. They just straight up tackled him because he was going to catch it. And he's too good. So I think you can play him at home anytime you're interested in Big Ben. You should be interested in Martavis. He's too efficient. 20-yard average depth of target. Listen, only a 14% target share, but the depth of target and his massive success rate and Bill Ben's willingness to feed him on the deep ball, that's going to make him viable. Le'Veon, his volume is back. Don't worry about it. And actually, we got to continue to, I think we continue to buy low on Le'Veon because he hasn't found the end zone yet, and people are tired of him not going into the end zone. 31 touches, a very good day. He just needed that touchdown to push him, and it's gonna come. He had a very solid day, looked better. The offensive line looked better at the point of attack. So, I think that Pittsburgh, we continue to target this offense, especially at home. Listen, the Vikings are going to struggle without Bradford. Case Keenum just is not the same passer, does not have the same accuracy, is not willing to take the same chances with Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And instantly, when Bradford was out, I had to get off of those Minnesota wide receivers, and I was glad I did. They're just not there. I mean, the volume is going to be there, and Rudolph, the volume is going to be there for those three primary pass catchers, but you got to wait for productivity until Bradford is back. I mean, the reality is it's just not it's a bummer. I do want to say this about Dalvin Cook. He scored, okay? Dalvin Cook scored. He got out to the outside. He had this beautiful little burst kind of in the mid, like I think it was like a 30-yarder. And it got called back because it was ruled a goal line. He stopped on the goal line. His knee glanced at his knee. It was one of those like tackles where the ball's like being extended and his knee hits down before the ball is out over the goal line. And then the TD gets vultured. So Dalvin Cook is going to continue to be somebody that I'm interested in. Listen, the Vikings O-line is better. 2.5 yards before contact. That's solid. That was one of the better metrics on the week. That's good, especially against a Pittsburgh run that, a Pittsburgh defense that, grades out pretty well. Without Bradford, you're going to have to feed Cook because, they're going to have to rely on him. And he is capable of that big outside burst. We saw it in week one. We see it in week two. He's got it. So I'm buying on Dalvin Cook. I think we're going to see some situations where he pops in the next couple weeks without Bradford in the lineup. Tennessee, Jacksonville. Listen, this game sucked until halftime. Tennessee then blew it up 30 points in the second half. They ran the ball 53% of the time. They're running it. And they're being efficient. They're really an effective offense. It's really interesting. Derrick Henry out-touched DeMarco Murray. So if you drafted DeMarco Murray early, it's time to freak out a little bit. Just, start tweeting at all of your favorite season-long experts and be like, should I draft DeMarco Murray for Derrick Henry? Should I be trading DeMarco Murray? Listen, he tweaked a hammy. He tweaked a hammy. He's old. Derrick Henry, though, is not old. And he is big, and he is strong, and he is fast. And so, there's a lot to like about this guy. Like, he is absolutely filthy. Mariota playing very well in the second half. 20 total targets to Decker and Rashard Matthews. Corey Davis left the game in the second half with a little soft tissue injury. But listen, what we thought would be true about Decker and Matthews is true. These guys are effective pro wide receivers, and Mariota is going to utilize them. It is only a matter of time before they start scoring touchdowns. Eric Decker is one of the better red zone receivers in the last 5 years. His touchdown rate is insane, and he is a massive guy. So we have to start saying, listen, Tennessee's going to start throwing some touchdowns here, and Marcus Mariota is going to find these wide receivers for touchdowns. We got to be aware of this. It's going to happen. Delanie Walker continues to find the end zone, though. This guy, it was an end around. That was just insanity to me. And he had a 118 passer rating on all of Mariota's targets. So he continues to be one of Mariota's favorite pieces. On the Jacksonville side, they're going to run the ball so much. Chris Ivory, again, 9 touches. Of course, Fournette, almost 20 touches there. Fournette was meh. Lee and Hearns, both wide receivers, saw, a decent target share. Hearns got the touchdown, but Lee saw a 40% target share here. I mean, there's going to be spots, but Bortles' turnover issues are just so, he's just so sloppy. Three turnovers. It's just not a good, fantasy offense to own. Right now, in certain situations you could see Jacksonville being viable, but we gotta be careful what we wish for. If we're looking at Jacksonville's offense, they could change week to week and be effective and ineffective. Tampa Bay, Chicago, sound the cannons. The Buc-ee's, looking very good. Yes, I lived in Chicago for a while, but I grew up in Tampa Bay. So this game was kind of like a must watch for me. Tampa Bay defense, filthy. I mean, Gerald McCoy is a man, boy. Seven pressures. The rest of the defense, elite linebacking grades from a bunch of guys. You add TJ Ward to the mix. It just seems unfair. They created four turnovers. One went for a pick six. They're very good. They're very good. They went 50-50 passer on, the Bucs did. Which I think is about right. I think that's what we expect. Cutter's going to run the ball, no doubt about it. They were not particularly effective, but Jaquizz, I was watching the game. I think Jaquizz is almost like a Devonta Freeman light. Good in traffic, quick. Capable of avoiding contact and creating positive plays out of nothing. But what he lacks is burst. He just doesn't have it. He got outside in a couple spots where you thought, like, oh, here we go, 15, 16-yard gainer. Not quite. The touchdown was excellent, though. He found his way into traffic. It wasn't supposed to be a touchdown. They found him in the backfield, and he got out of it. It was a really, really, really nice. Mike Evans, whoo, buddy, 30% target share, almost had a second TD, too. He had one straight across the middle. He went up and got it, and he got hit and just couldn't come down with it. DeSean Jackson, he scored a touchdown, but one foot was out. Like, Jameis is going to find these guys. It is ridiculous. 23% target share, four total end zone targets between DJX and Mike Evans. Like, no doubt about it. They're going to jam the middle, hammer, and then spread over the top. And listen, Mike Evans is going to be the person that Jameis goes to on every third down. It's going to happen. Every third down, and Mike Evans will deliver against average to below average secondaries who don't try to take him out of the game plan. Jameis, it's classic Jameis, not particularly accurate, 18 or 30. But listen, watching this game, you see two plays that could have gone slightly differently. The touchdown to DJX and the touchdown to Mike Evans, or the non-touchdowns, excuse me. If Mike Evans can hold on to the one in the end zone when he gets hit, 19 or 30, two touchdowns. If DJX has one foot, it was literally 4 inches back, 4 inches into the end zone, you're looking at a 20 of 30 passing, 67% completion rate with three touchdowns. That stat line is GPP winner worthy for Jameis Winston. Now, the Bears defense is not terrible, right? I think that's the word we use to describe them. Good? No, not quite. Relatively efficient and some pieces that are good. I think that you have some pieces, especially in the front line, that are pretty good. But they're not terrible. I mean, we have got to get on the Bucs early and often, especially DeSean Jackson, I think, in this situation. The Bears offense is just brutal. The entire whole line is now hurt. Glennon turned the ball over four different times, and there were so many drops from this entire Bears. Almost every Bears wide receiver, I think two or three of the Bears wide receivers had two plus drops. It could have been a very different game in the second half if the drops were not there. Like, they dropped two different third down passes, and they couldn't run the ball. They threw it 45 times. It's just unbelievable. To throw it 45 times with Mike Glennon there, what I think we have to be aware of is John Fox is going to be willing to throw the ball, and Glennon has been relatively effective, quietly effective, but completely let down by his pass catchers. I mean, there are a couple of things that indicate to me that Glennon and this team, they're bad. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to try to argue that they're good. What I'm trying to argue for is that there are going to be spots where Glennon might be a DFS value punt quarterback option. Okay. Think of it this way. Jordan Howard catches the touchdown last weekend. They beat the Falcons. Whoa. Hey, okay. Way to go, Mike Glennon. And in this Tampa Bay game, you take away four of the five drops. All of a sudden, Glennon has a better completion rate, and they've sustained some drives. Maybe they throw up an extra touchdown. I think we have to be aware that these things aren't completely box score visible. And Mike Glennon's mediocrity is very visible in the box score, but I think he's also been very let down by his skill position players and by situation, by how banged up this team is. Oakland at New York, moving on to the 4 o'clock games. Listen, it was a terrible feeling when I said to everybody on the live stream, listen, you want to have Michael Crabtree this week. I'm telling you, Michael Crabtree this week. And then people are texting, somebody asked me on Twitter, Crabtree or so-and-so. I was like, Crabtree, three touchdowns, Crabtree. And then I pivoted to Brandon Cooks. That was me, this guy. Hey, there's a difference between a good week and a great week. That's it. I knew it was a Crabtree day. So efficient. The Amari Cooper, four targets in the red zone. Just outlier, strange outlier. They're trying to take advantage of something. They're trying to hammer something into the film that people want to see. I don't know, but Crabtree is unbelievably efficient. A 12 of 13 on the year with three touchdowns. Are you kidding me? Derek Carr had a 136 passing rating. What? 82% completion rate? What? Are you kidding me? He only had, it's just unbelievable. And Crabtree himself, six targets, two end zone targets, and one deep ball. He turned that into three touchdowns. 50% of his freaking catches went for touchdowns. He's like one of the most, you know, efficiently valuable wide receivers there is out there. Oakland crushed the point of attack and run in the run game this year, which is exactly what we saw via Football Outsiders last year. They own the trenches. 3.5 yards before contact. Lynch got checked out of on one TD. That one touchdown, that first touchdown at Crabtree, Carr is under center and he sees something. And he steps back and he calls Seattle, Seattle, which I know it's been on Twitter all day. Seattle, Seattle, the audible, which means we're going to pass instead of run. And he just checked to, Michael Crabtree on the outside in man coverage. Makes total sense. But Lynch quietly, you know, he got the touchdown. He got the dance in. He got Hyphy on the sidelines. Oaktown down. It was amazing. I love Marshawn Lynch. If you're ever feeling down, you need to watch Marshawn Lynch dance on the sideline. Cooper is quiet, and I love that because I think people are going to see the massive touchdown number from Crabtree, but, like, Cooper is still going to get volume. He's still going to get volume, okay? We have to recognize that Carr is going to exploit the best wide receiver matchup that he has on a weekly basis. That kind of seems what they're going to do, and Carr is very efficient right now. Washington and Rashard behind Lynch getting volume. And listen, they're not going to risk Marshawn Lynch's health when they have two young, pretty effective backs who can absorb 20 carries a game between the two, 20 touches a game. And that's what they're doing. So in season long, it's hurting Marshawn Lynch's value. I think in certain situations in DFS, we can play him, but I don't think all those situations are there. I mean, this team will throw the ball, and they're just as likely to throw the ball in the red zone as they are running the ball. So the Jets, they're giving the Matt Forte the ball. It's obnoxious. It's stupid. Josh McCown is interesting. He kind of falls into the same, like, guys that I might punt quarterback with bucket as Josh McCown and Mike Glennon. A 116 passer rating. That's pretty good. He threw two TDs to Jermaine Kearse. Very productive last week. Productive again this week. I mean, you mean to tell me that in DFS, the ultra-low-owned McCown-Kearse stack would have been one that you could have possibly cashed with? Like, yeah, this is the thing. You got to be aware of these little strange things. Jermaine Kearse and Robbie Anderson saw deep balls. They saw end zone targets, and there are going to be weeks when, like I said, you couldn't possibly punt with McCown. Now, I think what's more indicative of is the Raiders' pass defense. If you allow a 116 passer rating to Josh McCown, there's two things that you could possibly read into this. One is, by the fourth quarter, they were just kind of bend, don't break. They were playing prevent defense. They weren't going to let anybody do anything serious. But I think the very interesting thing for me is, strategically, we want to attack passing offenses in Oakland. Two reasons. This offense is super effective in Oakland. They're going to challenge you and put you in negative game script. We saw it with Tennessee. And it supported three almost fantasy viable wide receivers in Matthews, Corey Davis, and Decker, who all had eight more targets or more in that week one game. Here it is again. The opposing team going into Oakland, facing Oakland, you're going to support a fantasy wide receiver because they are going to score. They're going to put you on your heels. You're going to have to throw the ball against Oakland to keep up with them. They're a really effective offense. So very interesting to me to be targeting teams in negative game strip. Miami at the Chargers. Philip Rivers is the most unlucky guy in football. I don't know what to say. To lose twice in 2 weeks with a rookie kicker missing field goals, like, where's Josh Lambeau? Go get him. Josh Lambeau doesn't miss all those field goals. And Miami, though, man, whew. Adam Gase and Jay get along. This is a thing. 50-50 run pass. Ajayi hit 30 touches. Are you kidding me? Jay, he had a massive 45% target share to Jarvis Landry. Parker, though, had a 27% target share. That's all he's got eyes for, those two guys. That's it. You're either running the ball with Ajayi or you're throwing into Jarvis Landry and Devontae Parker. Period. That's how this offense works. So nice. It's so predictable. Landry put up a heck of a game. 13 of 15 with 78 yards. Parker saw 5 deep targets. Wow. That's not scripted. Are you kidding me? They're going for him. They're going for him. They want him to blow this thing up. Half of the team's air yards market share, 50% of their air yards went to Parker. That's a big deal. He didn't score, but we have to be paying attention to that. Jay's completing 73% of his passes. You don't think he's comfortable in Gase's offense? They're on the road week one. He hasn't played NFL football in the entire month of August, and he goes out and he throws a 73% completion rate, no interceptions against a defense that projects pretty solid, decent pass rush. You know, they lose Jason Verrett, but Joey Bosa is still one of the better edge rushers in the game. Clearly comfortable, clearly comfortable. Rivers, I feel terrible for the guy. Dude went fucking 24 for 25 with a touchdown. Keenan Allen had a 90% catch rate and 100 yards passing. 100 yards receiving, and they still lose this game. It's unbelievable. I feel so bad. I don't understand how to, you know, he's old. He's got a great bolo tie game. I don't know what to say. I feel bad for Rivers. Tyrell still getting the long bond. Still relevant. 4 for 4, 15% target share. But listen, he catches all of those balls, and his air yards are very, very, very much in play. Hunter Henry, very solid. 7 for 7 with 80 yards. Clearly able to support two tight ends. I mean, that's the bottom line. If week one you were going, oh no, Hunter Henry is worthless. Nope. They can support. They did it last year. They're going to do it again this year. And, you know, Hunter Henry is running more routes than Antonio Gates. He's getting more snaps than Antonio Gates. But Antonio Gates continues to be that red zone weapon. We know that, okay? Melvin Gordon, 16 touches and a touchdown. Massively inefficient on the carries, but 65 yards in the passing game. That is a thing. That is a thing. If they want to just put Melvin Gordon in the backfield and throw him the ball 10 times a game, they might do that. And they might just, Philip Rivers could, you know, end up throwing the ball 35, 40 times in certain games because they need to start winning. You know, to lose two games that they could have won on the last play of the game is just unbelievable. Dallas-Denver, this game was really interesting. You learned a lot from this game, boy. Denver committed to taking away Zeke, and they did. Maybe that whole Denver can't stop the run thing, is it over? They stopped the best offensive line, or, well, one of the best offensive lines and one of the best running backs as far as efficiency in the league. Committed to force Dak to throw 83% of the time. Dez with 15 targets, but only 6 catches. A couple really nice ones. But listen, this guy is getting so much volume. Red zone targets. I think he has 6 red zone targets this year. It's insane. There's a reason. I mean, they're trying to force feed him in order to open up things for Zeke. And they're going to be, they have a ton of tough matchups on this schedule, but there are situations where we have to be aware that the, you know, Dez and Dak are a very, very viable stack. Jason Witten, 10 of 12 for 95 yards and a touchdown. He dropped a touchdown, straight up hit him in the hands. Can you imagine if you saw Jason Witten with 10 for 12, 95, and two touchdowns, you would be like, okay, this is probably the most viable passing piece in this offense. He had a touchdown last week. So if they're going to throw the ball and they're down, you've got to consider Jason Witten as part of your tight end pool. He still isn't priced that well. Dak loves him. Broncos offensive line, not great, but C.J. Anderson truly was. 118 yards and a touchdown. I don't know, you know, chicken or the egg, is Dallas's rush defense? Or is it Denver's rushing offense? Or is it the Denver efficiency of Trevor Siemian? Because unbelievable. Siemian, I said this in my Vegas article, Simeon's going to play well and they're going to score more points than they're implied. I didn't know if they were going to win the game. I thought it might be closer than this, but I knew they were going to score more than 21 points. He's efficient as hell. 116 passer rating, 75% completion rate in the red zone. That's unbelievable. He threw four touchdowns. I was watching the game and I was talking to my neighbor, my buddy who was over, and I was just like, Trevor Siemian he really seems to be the kind of quarterback who makes the right play. Like, you want him to make the right throw, he makes the right throw. The right throw is available, he's going to make the play. Two wide receivers. Thomas and Sanders, both mashing target shares at 26%. Sanders gets the love in the red zone, though. Don't forget that. Sanders gets the love in the red zone. Two touchdowns for him. He seems to be getting more targets in the red zone, but I am by low on Demaryius Thomas, no doubt about it. Scored five touchdowns. They've run some of the most plays inside the red zone this year. They're top five in running plays inside the red zone. They have one of the highest rushing success rates in the league. This Denver offense is doing things, and I think Trevor Siemian's efficiency and lack of mistake-making is really what allows them to do. And also, it helps that C.J. Anderson is healthy. Really, that's a lot that helps. He wasn't his 100% last year. That ankle was not 100%. So I think there's spots where we want to be targeting this Denver offense earlier than when people are saying, oh, I think they might be good. And, you know, I don't know. I think they're good. I think they're efficient. Not excellent, but I think they're efficient and they can control games with their defense. Washington and the Rams, people were talking about Jared Goff, man. Jared and Cooper Kupp. Jared Goff is still Jared Goff. But Todd Gurley might be trending in the right direction. Sean McVay might have created a system in which Todd Gurley can actually succeed. The offensive line is not good, but the truth is, Gurley, if he can get him the open field, he is good. He is good, and that's always what we saw in St. Louis, right? If he can get to the second level, he's going to be effective, and that's what you saw at Georgia as well. Open field, he was very effective, and that's where he scored his two touchdowns. He had 87 total rush yards, 48 passing, 19 total touches, but good for two touchdowns that he created on his own. They weren't situational. 120 total yards and two touchdowns. That's a good sign, I think, for Todd Gurley owners, and I think that, you know, it is cautious optimism. The Washington defense is not elite, but they're not as bad as the Colts. And for him to go out and do it effectively, I think McVay schematically perhaps understands how to create situations where Gurley can succeed. Sammy Watkins had a 9% target share. His talent is going to be wasted here. And it's because Jared Goff is ineffective in the pocket. And this offensive line still allows a lot of pressure on the quarterback. You know, it's also Josh Norman, but Cooper Kupp, 27% of targets, but only three catches. 27% of targets in the Rams offense is not worth a lot. Okay. And I don't, you know, Cooper Kupp is, everybody loves Julian Edelman. I mean, fuck it. Everyone, I'll say it. Everyone loves white wide receivers. He's not that good. I mean, he's good. He's got a talent, but you can't attach yourself to a slot wide receiver with a completely inefficient quarterback. And listen, it's just not there. The volume isn't there. Until I see him start to get 8 to 10 targets, there's a reason Julian Edelman is so much better. It's because of fucking Tom Brady. Jared Goff does not equal Tom Brady. Don't talk yourself into this on a week-to-week basis. Until you start to see this offense scoring 30 points a week, which they won't, you know, you have to be very, very careful with your your love for Cooper Kupp out of the slot. Samaje Perine, he's got the job, 22 carries. Fat Rob has an injury, and it's him and Chris Thompson. Chris Thompson, man, he's probably the most explosive playmaker they have on that team. 7 targets, 12 carries, blew one up again for a touchdown, took it deep. 3.5 yards at the point of attack for the Washington offensive line. Like, are they good? Question mark. I'm not really sure, but that's a pretty good number against a Rams defense that supposedly was good. I'm not really sure how you create 3.5 yards ahead of contact without being relatively effective. I'm going to buy on Terrell Pryor. He's one of my guys that I'm sneaky high on right now. 2 mediocre weeks, rock solid coverage units against him both times. Listen, the first week was fine, but second week was rough. Perfect. Great. I love it. I'm going to go after Terrell Pryor right now. I think he's very interesting. He's going to continue to be the most dominant piece of that passing game. The question is are they going to let him pass it? Because they ran the ball 55% of the time with Kirk Cousins. That's not really, I mean, I guess it's positive game script. They were leading pretty much the entire time. And they're trying to limit Cousins' mistakes. I don't know. Take pressure off of Cousins. I don't know. Or maybe they just were felt like the guys in the trenches were so effective that they just couldn't stop running the ball. So, you know, they won. You got to worry whether or not they're going to give Kirk Cousins that passing volume that we are used to see. I think negative game script, Kirk Cousins is very interesting in high scoring possibilities. San Francisco, Seattle. I told you this isn't the same San Francisco defense. They got to Cam. They got some pressure there. They didn't allow and they proved it again against Seattle. They're pretty solid. They have some nice pieces. And without Chip Kelly there to completely handicap them via physical fatigue, they're going to run fewer plays. They're going to be more capable. They go on the road to Seattle, and they put up basically a full four-quarter performance until Russell Wilson escapes at the end of this game. There's some fantasy value on the offensive side of the ball, too. I mean, this is, again, that bucket of, like, things that people traditionally think are really, really bad but provide fantasy value, right? San Francisco still is 0-2. They still have – Brian Hoyer has been really bad. But Carlos Hyde, 18 touches, 140 yards. That's not a joke against Seattle. I mean, that's great. That's really good. Marquise Goodwin got a ton of targets, couldn't really do anything. Garcon saw the same 20% target share. It's good to see him consistent, even a bad matchup. Brian Hoyer was hashtag not good. So you expect that. Mediocre replacement level quarterback against one of the best passing defenses in the league. Yes, of course. Seattle, it's Chris Carson time. My season-long shares of Chris Carson are going to start to pay off. 21 touches, 93 yards. His offensive line is bad, but this is a relatively efficient offense. We'll see if they can figure something out. I'm not particularly bullish on the Seattle offense right now. Tyler Lockett, Doug Baldwin, both 20% target share. Paul Richardson really did struggle with volume, which is not good. I did not want to see that. After a great performance in Green Bay, you kind of wanted to see the Paul Richardson volume stay consistent, but not really there. He did get the only touchdown in the game, but he wasn't all running a ton of routes, didn't have a ton of snaps, so kind of hard to trust where Paul Richardson is going to fall in the pecking order here. Russ was not great either. Took 3 sacks. According to Pro Football Focus, he also had 4 different interceptable passes, and they pressured him. Like, DeForest Buckner alone on San Francisco had 9 hurries. That's insane. He got hit 4 times. It's a massive rate. This offensive line is a liability, and Russell Wilson is going to be running for his life every single week. So until we have a good sense of this team can't get pressure, okay, great. They have nobody who is elite at getting pressure. They have no pressure rate. Then we can look at the Seattle offense possibly, or situations where they have no run defense. They're going to be able to hammer the ball and set up the pass. That's when you're going to want Russ. But right now, I mean, one touchdown over the course of 2 games against 2 teams that you should be able to score a lot of points on. Not good, Bob. Not great. Actually, excuse me, it's not great, Bob. Green Bay, Atlanta, the Pack. What a game. This was a fun game to watch. The Pack can't run the ball, though, that. I mean, it just, O-line was not effective. Monty, very solid, however, at his Uber chalk self. 16 touches, 110 yards, 2 touchdowns. Gosh, man, the guy can move in the open field, too. Great hands, powerful, powerful on contact. Very nice. Very good to see Davante Adams kind of re-emerge. I was worried he was going to get phased out for Randall Cobb too much. I think Davante Adams is very interesting. Deep ball. He is the only other guy on this team who's capable of getting deep balls in besides Jordy. And he had that great catch in the left corner in the end zone when they were down. 8 of 10 for 99 yards and a touchdown, 21% target share. And now, you're looking at our injuries for Randall Cobb. You're looking at for injuries for Jordy Nelson. Davante Adams is going to be getting volume from Aaron Rodgers, as will Martellus Bennett. Martellus Bennett, 21% target share. He did nothing, though. His hands look slow. Rodgers was targeting him, and he just couldn't. There was a drop or two, but there was also a bunch that were just kind of mistimed. And I don't think Rodgers' timing is on pace with Marty, but he will get volume. Like, that was clear. That was clear for him to get 10 targets in this game. That's a big deal. I think Martellus Bennett is going to be in viable tight end punt situations, where we can certainly look at him. Atlanta in positive game script, go get Devonta Freeman in your lineup, please. This man just looked good. Watched him last night, 100 yards on 21 touchdowns, two TDs. He's just good. He's a really solid NFL running back. You watch him and you're just like, fuck, that guy's talented. In traffic, making great moves. He got plenty of touches in both the passing game and in the running game. Positive game script means you have a home. When Atlanta is a home favorite, we have got to always think of Devonta Freeman. He's going to get red zone looks. They're going to create red zone opportunities. He is the way that this offense is going to go when they are controlling games. I'm telling you. Julio just torches on the deep cross. Immediately when you see him line up on the left and you see a decent pocket, you have got to think Julio coming straight across the middle from left to right. It's just every single time. He did it, two or three times to the tune of like 40 yards. It's just so, so filthy. 5 for 9 for 100 plus yards. But the guy that I love right now is Mohamed Sanu. 2 weeks of the 20% plus target share. This week now it's 26% on the season. 11 for 15, 132 receiving yards. He's got more targets than Julio. This guy is just as big and just as physical. He's just not nearly as fast as Julio Jones is. And when safeties have to double down on Julio Jones, Mohamed Sanu is Matt Ryan's second read every single time. He's his second read every single time, and he is catching the hell out of the ball. I love Mohamed Sanu. He's only 5,200 last week on on FanDuel. You're going to continue every time you want to attack Atlanta wants to attack a passing defense. This Mohamed Sanu has to be in your player pool. All right, moving on. A lesson that we are going to learn from week 2. Some tools going into week 3. Here we go. Grading team offense. What do we know now? What are we seeing from offenses that perhaps other people aren't seeing? What are we seeing from play calling tendencies that perhaps other people aren't seeing? Here's a couple things. Most trips to the red zone. Who cares about trips to the red zone, Sean? Look for touchdowns. Trips to the red zone are an indicator of efficiency. How many plays you run inside the red zone is an indicator of your first down rate. There's correlation there between offensive success. And tell me that these teams have not been offensively successful this year. Well, some of them haven't, but some of them have. There's something here, right? Pats, Broncos, Saints, Cards, weird. Raiders and Titans. Now, 4 or 5 of those offense, very predictable to say, okay, I get it. Trips to the red zone, plays inside the red zone, Pats, the Broncos, the Saints. Broncos have looked very, very good lately. They were very, very effective yesterday. The Saints, continue to play catch up, but it's Drew Brees. He's going to be near the top of this list every single year. Raiders and Titans, that makes sense as well. Two offenses that were prime for breakouts, had 2 good weeks in week 2, makes total sense. Cardinals, though, what? most plays in the red zone? Are you kidding me? And barely any points to show for it. Very, very interesting. I don't know how to read that. I think it's more of an indictment of how they can't score. What are they doing? You know, they were down in the red zone running a ton of plays last week, and they just could not do anything with it. The Saints are throwing the hell out of the ball down there, but the Pats are running the ball like they always do. Some of the most run plays inside, the most run plays inside the red zone of any team. Okay, now, what about just pass run ratios in general, situation neutral? Baltimore, they're the most run heavy team in the NFL right now. Go by Javorius Allen. Okay, I'm buying Javorius Allen. Jacksonville, Buffalo, Denver, Carolina, all nipping at their heels. A lot of those make sense. We expect Jacksonville to run the ball. We expect Buffalo to run the ball. Carolina is going to try to limit Cam's inaccuracies, and they're going to run the ball a lot. They got two backs that can do it. It's interesting. I think that you're going to continue to see that with no Greg Olsen there. And that indicates to me, when do I want these teams? I want them as home favorites. We saw LeSean McCoy as a home favorite, very successful. We saw C.J. Anderson at home, very successful. We see, we saw Leonard Fournette as a week one, wasn't a favorite and wasn't at home, but very successful and probably should have been favored in that situation. Passing teams, very interesting. These are sort of predictable as well. The Giants, the Bears, interesting. Arizona, Philadelphia, New Orleans. A lot of that aligns with what we know, right? You're going to expect the McAdoo offense to throw the ball a shit ton. You're going to expect Drew Brees to throw the ball a lot. You're going to expect an Arians offense to throw the ball a lot. Chicago and Philadelphia is very situational. Philadelphia doesn't have a running back. They've been down in a couple games, so they're going to throw the ball a ton. Carson Wentz, their best skill position players, they're wide receivers. So they're going to have to do that. Chicago, negative game script. That's it. That's all they got. You stop Jordan Howard, that offense has to throw the ball because they're going to be behind all the time. As far as efficiency and success, Tennessee, Houston, Jacksonville, Denver, Dallas, New England, the most competent at running the ball. We should continue to buy New England running backs. I don't know why people talk themselves into, it's such a hard thing to predict. It's not hard to predict tons of opportunity. That's what they do. They create tons of opportunity. Tennessee and Denver have the most trips to the red zone. And in the passing game, Kansas City, Denver again on this list. This is so interesting to me, see the Denver offense. Should I be too bullish? No, I'm going to pump the brakes. We get to wait for a full four. I'm going to wait a full 4 or 5 weeks before I say the Denver offense is really going to be an elite fantasy option. Not an elite fantasy option, but a high-level fantasy option. But Kansas City, very interesting. Kansas City, Denver, Oakland, New Orleans, Green Bay. Makes total sense. But Kansas City, very interesting to see them as one of the highest passing teams. You don't expect Trevor Siemian and Alex Smith as quote unquote game managers to be guys who are throwing the ball a lot. But I think balance of attack means a lot to these teams. And you see a good running game paired with effective wide receivers and pass catchers. It's going to create a good situation for the quarterback where they can be effective in both ways. Now, as far as team defense, we want to try to figure out where do our preseason feelings about defenses align with what we're seeing as far as fantasy points allowed. That's when we're kind of start to say, okay, what did the eye test at the beginning of the year tell me versus what we're seeing now? Listen, QB scoring, passing offense is the clearest indicator. So we're going to primarily look towards passing or quarterback success and passing offense success as an indicator because an indicator correlates with win rate, quarterback passing offense success, correlates with fantasy production, all that good stuff. Top five in points allowed to the quarterback, Saints, Pats, Jets, Cards, Chargers. Two very expected, okay? Saints and Jets, I could have predicted those. But the Pats, the Cards, and Chargers, very, very interesting to see those. We're going to have to play wait and see to see how these teams either correct or overcorrect. Very interesting to me. Least allowed makes a lot more sense. The bottom half of this makes a lot of sense. Baltimore, Carolina, Seattle, LA, Houston, Jacksonville. Those teams really, really grade out well as far as defensively whole units. Teams that want to focus on the defense, all six of those units make sense. And they have performed thus far. So we know who we want to avoid. We know that there's some things at the top that might shake out. They're aligning with what we expect. I think what's interesting is what we rely on is this. people are comfortably going to, recreational players are going to comfortably say, oh yeah, man, I'm going after the Saints and I'm going after the Jets every single week. They suck. Great. That's fine. Okay. Play the chalk. That's awesome. But for the rest of us, what we're going to try to do is we're going to avoid those bottom six. We're going to acknowledge the top six as probably chalky, popular matchup plays on a weekly basis. And we're going to try to find the gray areas that are exploitable in between. Okay, where do things like, where do things, you know, like, are the Cardinals really that bad? Okay, or is Jacksonville really an elite defense all the time? How do things happen? You know, who has had success against the Bears? Who has had success against the Falcons? Who has had success against these teams that grade out in the middle somewhere? You know, and I think it's interesting to try to project gray area. And when you're capable of projecting gray area, it's when you find ownership advantage. We see this a lot. Ownership falls off of a cliff when you drop drop into the fourth, fifth, sixth highest over under on the week. So if you're willing to plant your flag on a game that may not be as easily projectable for other fantasy players, for example, this week, if you were willing to say, I like this Kansas City Philadelphia game, I'm going to go after the skill position players in this game, and I'm going to go ahead and stay away. I'm not going to own too much of New England, New Orleans. Well, that could have been a very productive decision for you because you're going to get a massive, massive benefit in ownership. And if you're able to make some decisions that come at low ownership and some decisions that come at high ownership, you get the best of both worlds, right? Having Ty Montgomery, and there was actually Brian Mears on Fantasy Labs wrote an article about this. You got to read it. It's barbelling, right? Well, barbelling is kind of high risk and low risk players, but the chalk and the non-chalk, right? The chalk and the non-chalk, pairing them together is one of the most efficient ways to build lineups in large field contests, because you rise with the predictable performance with everybody else, and then the not so predictable performance where everybody else shies away and goes, well, I don't know how I feel about, that's when you make hay. And that's what we're trying to do by understanding some things like team defense and fantasy points allowed to this point. See where it aligns with public expectation of strength, the schedule, and stuff like that. Now, one other thing. Sorry, I made this note and I want to just share it with you because I made it. Why not say it? On receiving points allowed, we see very similar at the top. Saints, Colts, Bucks, interestingly enough, one game, they allowed a ton of production to the wide receiver. Pats, Cards, Titans, that's an interesting one. Very effective against the run, not so effective against the pass. And the least allowed, there's some interesting names down here. Carolina, Houston, Jacksonville, LA, Baltimore, Cincinnati. There's a reason they re-signed Dre Kirkpatrick. So very interesting as well to see some of these names. Again, projectable, not so projectable, right? It's the projectable is on the heads and the tails, right? The top five, bottom five, top six, bottom six. The gray area comes in the middle, and that gray area is massively exploitable for ownership purposes. So keep that in mind going into week three. Hey, game by game breakdown coming at you tomorrow, and the player breakdown coming at you on Wednesday. Of course, we will then have a bevy of articles on Thursday and Friday for your reading pleasure. And the lineup show, of course, as always, Friday night, 8:30. Patreon.com/lineuplogic. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you guys. As always, I will see you Monday night.